All right. Guys, we are, for the last couple of weeks, we've been talking about the man born blind, one of my favorite accounts in Scripture. And this week, we're going to take a look, actually, at his response to some who would come against him, critics of Jesus, which happened to be, actually, the Jewish authorities at the time, okay, who really aren't receiving this miracle of healing all that well. Okay, so actually let's start with, I'm going to actually preview this with you guys just a little bit, because I'm going to try to teach you like two lessons at the same time, okay, as we go forward. One of them is about sharing Jesus with others. One of the most pure and effective ways of doing it that doesn't require a lot of like biblical knowledge. It just requires that you know your own story, okay? And the second one, which might be even more important for some of you, no it's not, is how to win an argument. And how to come across really, really good in an argument. So this is another good skill to learn. But I'm going to kind of weave those back and forth together, which not all congregations could handle that. But I believe that you guys can. All right? We've got to be paying attention, though, okay? So let's start with just where we left off, which is in John chapter 9, beginning with now verse 8 and also 9.
The neighbors and those who had seen him before as a beggar were saying, "Is this not the man who used to sit and beg?" Some said, "It is he." Others said, "No, but he is like him." He kept saying, "I am the man."
So here's one of the problems, guys, that we run into. Here's a guy that's been pretty well known for a very long time, okay? Except now, he's radically different. He's been this blind man his whole life, and now all of a sudden, he's been changed. He has this encounter with Jesus, his eyes have been opened up, and now he can see. And people are looking at him now as this guy who's different, and they're like, is that the same guy? Can't be the same guy. No, it's not the same guy. Or they, okay? And so I want you guys to think about this, because there's a reason why that happens, okay? It's a reason why it sometimes happens to us. Sometimes the most difficult people, okay, to see the radical change that's occurred in you are the ones that know you the best or have known you for the longest time. Family is like really, really, really difficult to get them to recognize that you've changed. Nicole and I encounter that all the time. It's so frustrating, okay? So I want to show you, I used to do this all the time, day one, with my biology classes, okay? When we talk about science. Okay, because one of the things we got to talk about, it doesn't matter whether you're looking at a textbook, doesn't matter whether you're talking to somebody else, is this idea about bias. Okay, so I put the definition down there. Okay, bias really is how you see things. And we think everybody sees things exactly the same way, right? You and I look at the same thing and we see it the same way. But that's not true. Okay, everybody has their own spin on things based on prior knowledge and past experience. It has a tendency to like cloud or change our vision, the way that we see things. Okay? And so I'm going to show you, and this is what I used to do with the kids early on in all my science classes, because I want them to be aware of bias. It's one of the reasons why you usually when you do things, you do it in groups and you both observe the same thing and you kind of talk about it, because what you're seeing and what the person next to you is seeing may not be exactly the same thing based on your bias. And guys, I'll just tell you that there is no such thing as an unbiased anything. Everybody has past experience, and everybody has prior knowledge. Okay, and you can be try to be as unbiased as you possibly can, but it's virtually impossible. Okay, so now if you've seen this picture before, I don't want you to ruin it for anybody. It's been around for a very long time. I actually, when I was in college, I saw this for the very first time. It was a science class, and that's why I picked this up. But so. As we came into class, we were given a picture. This was the picture that I was given, okay? And it was a science class, it was a college class, and we were supposed to record as detailed of observations as we possibly could. What do you see in the picture, okay? And so I'm studying it. I want to do really good. I'm making all my observations, you know, as detailed observations as you possibly can. So you really look at it. And I see an old woman, right? With a big nose. Looks like she's got like a fur collar or something wrapped around. She's got the, what do they call it, Nicole? Babushka?
Babushka.
Babushka. On her head, and she obviously is old, and so I'm writing all this stuff down. Okay? And we had a period of time, maybe 5-7 minutes, whatever it was, to really take a close look at it. Same picture you guys are looking at right now. Okay? And so then, up on the overhead projectors in those days, so in the overhead projector, we got to look at this picture. Okay? And everybody was supposed to say what they observed about this picture. Well, when I looked at that, it was basically the same old woman. Okay? With a little bit more detail. Okay? Except the people are shouting out what they see, and we get people say, you know, it's an old woman. But there were other people who say, no, it's not an old woman, that's a young woman. And so you're like, well, point out some of the things. It's like, well, over here, you know, she's got the, I use my laser pointer, since I have it, okay? She's got the big nose. And they're like, that's not a nose, that's her cheek. I'm like, what are you talking about? You know, she's obviously like wrinkly eye, and they're like, that is not an eye, that's her ear. And so there's this debate going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth about who this is. And then little by little, in the class, people start to be like, oh, and they start laughing, and they're like, it's like, I see it, I get it. And I was like, and I didn't see it. Guys, I looked at this, and I saw only an old woman. Okay? Now I'm going to show you the last half, and then we'll come back to this. Okay? What I didn't realize is half of the class got this picture to look at. Okay? And this picture, obviously, unless you've already been biased because of the other picture that you looked at, this is a picture of a young woman, right? She's got the necklace down here. It's not really a babushka, but it's kind of a, you know, a hat, and got the you know, and she's got her face turned to the side. Can you see her? But just so you know, I still have a hard time seeing this young woman. I still see kind of the old woman in this picture. You believe that? Go back to the other one. Okay? So this is the one that I have. And guys, I hate being unable to see something that everybody else can, or unable to do anything. So little by little, like, everybody in the class is like, oh my God, oh, don't you see it? And I'm like, no, I don't see it. And they keep saying, oh, come on, you gotta see it. They're pointing to this, you know, this is her necklace down here, and this is, you know, this is blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I didn't see it. Okay? But what do you do when everybody is trying to persuade you and you feel like you should see something that you don't? Of course you lie. Oh yeah, I see it. Oh yeah, okay. But I didn't see it. You know what I'm talking about? But I pretended like I did. But it was driving me nuts. Okay? And so when the class got over, I asked the professor if I could have that picture, because I wanted to study it some more. I wanted to see what everybody else could see, but I couldn't see it. And I took this stupid thing home with me, back to the dorm, and I'm looking at this thing, and I spent like, I can't tell you how long I spent studying this thing to see the young woman in the picture. And I couldn't. Okay? It wasn't actually until the next morning I got up and I looked at it fresh that I finally saw it. It was a combination. Right? Are you guys able to see both figures? Some people can't. Don't lie if you can't. It's okay. I couldn't. It took me like 2 days to figure it out. Okay? But it demonstrated to me I'm a man of very strong bias. Alright? But let me just tell you, and this is the thing, I used to use this also as like a double lesson with the kids at the same time, because I say, okay, so just so you know, whatever you see first is what you're most likely to see next. Okay? And now I see both pictures in there, but I always see the old lady first. Okay? Now why is that important? So I used to tell the kids, first impressions are everything. Okay, when you walk into class, and the very first day, you're a jerk, guess what? You're going to be a jerk forever. And even if you're not a jerk, you're going to look like a jerk that's just behaving himself today. You know what I mean? And if you come in that first day, and you make a really good impression, you're like this, you know, really sweet kid, okay? Even if you come in the next day and act like a jerk, I'm just going to feel like, oh, he's probably having a bad day. I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. That's a good, you know what I'm saying? It takes so much work to overcome a poor first impression. Whatever you see first in someone is what you have a tendency to see over and over and over again. Okay? That's why they say you never get a second chance to make a first impression. First impressions are huge. And the other part of it is, guys, we never know when we're going to encounter somebody for the very first time. You know? I'm just letting you know, it's so super important. But if you have, you know, you're going to have an opportunity to meet somebody for the first time, whatever it is, because you put on your best look, and it'll always see that way. Okay? Now, the flip side of it is, okay, and that's why the most difficult people to talk to about the transformation that you've undergone are people that have known you for a very long time. Why? Because they always remember you first as the person that they knew first. Okay, so guys, I got a huge transformation story. And actually, Bev's daughter went to Fenton and all of her friends, and she graduated a little while ago, but I ran into a ton of students that I knew from back. She graduated like 2004 or something. Okay, it was shortly after my Christ transformation. Okay, but those who knew me then would be like, that can't be Pastor Rod. I mean, that can't be Mr. Lot, is what they call it. You know, I wasn't a pastor then. I mean, that can't be Mr. Lot. Is that really Mr. Lot? And so I had them kind of like timidly come up to me after I did the wedding service, okay, after the service, and say, are you Mr. Lot? Because they couldn't believe that I would be a pastor. You know what I'm saying? And they still had a hard time with it, even once they saw that I was, I mean, they could see him, okay? The flip side of it is, those who have only known me as a pastor, when I tell them how I used to be, they really have a hard time believing that. You believe it? They always see you first in the way that they first saw you. Even, and you can try to convince them that it's different now, but they always see that way. That's one of the reasons why it's very, very difficult sometimes. I tell you this so that you don't get frustrated or discouraged sometimes with family members who refuse to believe that you've actually changed. You know, they think it's just an act, or they think you're going to go back to the way that you are, or maybe sometimes you fall back into that and they won't give you the benefit of the doubt. Say, see, I knew you weren't a Christian. Just pretending. The very, very hardest ones to talk to about the radical change that has happened to you are those that knew you from before. So, just know that. It's that bias going in, and we can't do anything about that. We just recognize that it exists. And guys, just so you know, Jesus had the exact same problem. It's not that he messed up. I mean, he did everything perfectly. So let's go ahead and read Mark 6, beginning of verse 3.
Then they stopped. Justus the carpenter, the son of Mary, and the brother of James, Joseph, Judas, and Simon, and his sisters were right here among us. They were deeply offended and refused to believe in him. Then Jesus told them, A prophet is honored everywhere except in his own hometown and among his relatives and his own family. And because of their unbelief, he couldn't do any miracles among them except to place his hands on a few sick people and heal them. And he was amazed at their unbelief. And Jesus went from village to village teaching the people.
Okay. So, guys, I think that's one of those things that's really, really important that we recognize going in. Okay? Family and friends that knew you from before are going to be the hardest ones to convince that you're not who you once were. It was even the same with Jesus. It's like, isn't he the carpenter's kid? I mean, who is this guy? And because of their unbelief, he wasn't able to do very much with them. Sometimes our family and our friends that knew us from before are the most difficult ones for us to convince. Okay? Just know that going in so you don't get discouraged. Recognize the reason that it happens. It's because of the bias. But you still keep plugging away. Okay? It's like the old woman and the new woman. Eventually, I saw it. Okay? If you're struggling with that, keep plugging away. Eventually, perhaps they will actually see the other side. Okay? And I wanted to share that with you. But let's go ahead and move on. Back to the blind man again. Okay? Now, verse 10 up to verse 14.
They asked him, "Who healed you? What happened?" He told them, "The man they called Jesus made mud and spread it over my eyes and told me, go to the pool of Siloam and wash yourself. So I went and washed, and now I can see." "Where is he now?" they asked. "I don't know," he replied. Then they took the man who had been blind to the Pharisees, because it was on the Sabbath that Jesus had made the mud and healed him.
Okay, so now some of those same friends question him. okay? And guys, we run into this as well. Some will have a sincere interest in what happened with you. Others will not. Others will be looking for a reason to discredit Jesus. And so he actually encounters some that are a little bit insincere, okay? And so what do? They listen to him, and then they take him to the Jewish authorities. They're really stabbing him in the back, right? Because the Jewish authorities are looking for something that they can pin on Jesus, that they can use to discredit him or eliminate him, okay? And in this particular case, the biggest thing is he did it on the Sabbath. See? There's something wrong with him. If he was really a man of God, he would not have done that on that particular day. And so they look for reasons to discredit what it is. Okay? You guys know that going in also. In your testimony or when you evangelize, there will be those that have a sincere interest, and there will be those that will be looking for a hole in your story. Okay? So, they take him to the Pharisee, and now we begin the cross-examination.
The Pharisees asked the man all about it. So he told them, "You put the mud over my eyes, and when I washed it away, I could see." One of the Pharisees said, "This man Jesus is not from God, for he is working on the Sabbath." Others said, "But how could an ordinary sinner do such miraculous signs?" For there was a deep division of opinion among them.
And guys, just so you know, it's one of the reactions that we always have to Jesus. Okay, if Jesus always creates a great division. Okay, rarely do you find somebody that's in that gray area. Either they're like, "Oh my gosh, that he was incredible," or there's the other ones like, "He was a hoax. That was a lie. That was okay." And there's this division that happens just naturally. And so even among the Jewish authorities, they're divided on this. They don't get it. They understand that this was a miracle that he did, but they also understand that he did it in breaking the law at the same time. So it's just like, is he for good and for real, or is he a fraud, a hoax, and a sinner? And so they're divided. Let's go ahead and go to verse 17.
Then the Pharisees again questioned the man who had been blind and demanded, "What's your opinion about this man who healed you?" The man replied, "I think he must be a prophet."
Okay, so they asked the man, "What's your opinion of this guy, Jesus?" Okay, now keep in mind that when they say prophet, sometimes we think of prophets as those that can predict the future, right? That's not what they would have considered a prophet to be. For them, a prophet was a man of God. Okay, somebody that acted in God's behalf or brought God's message. And the man says, basically, "I think I had a spiritual encounter. I think that was of God." Right? That's his response. "What do you think about this guy?" "I think he was of God." Well, that's not exactly what they want to hear. So let's go ahead and keep going. Now let's look at it in verse 18 and 19.
The Jewish leaders still refused to believe the man had been blind and could now see. So they called in his parents. They asked them, "Is this your son? Was he born blind? If so, how can he see now?"
So, they're not getting what they want out of the guy, right? They bring in the parents. Because this could be a guy that's just pretending to be the blind man, right? To give Jesus credit. And so they bring in his parents. And the parents say, so let's go ahead and read that one.
His parents replied, "We know this is our son and that he was born blind. But we don't know how he can see or who healed him. Ask him. He is old enough to speak for himself." His parents said this because they were afraid of the Jewish leaders, who had announced that anyone saying Jesus was the Messiah would be expelled from the synagogue.
Okay, so the parents vouch for the fact that he is indeed their son. But that's as far as they want to go. Everybody knows that at this point, because we're getting closer and closer to the end of Jesus' life. In fact, the next time he comes back to Jerusalem, they're going to kill him. okay? So we're getting at the end of it. And at this point, the Jewish authorities are out to get him. And they've made it very, very clear. Anybody that takes Jesus aside, anybody that's a disciple or follower of him, we got no place for you here in the synagogue. In case the synagogue in the time of Jesus was like the central hub, right? It's where communities got together. To be expelled from that was literally to be ostracized from the whole community. People wouldn't do business with you. People wouldn't talk to you. I mean, that was like one of the worst senses that you could possibly have, to be expelled from the synagogue. And the parents know, if we take the side of Jesus, there's a very good chance that the Jewish authorities are going to take it out on us. That could be very, very bad. And so they're afraid of what could happen. And so they simply say, he is indeed my son. He's an adult, though. I wasn't there. I didn't see it. I don't know exactly what happened. But he does, and he's an adult. You can question him. So we don't know exactly how old the man is. We know that he was blind from birth. But for the Jews, he became an adult male at age 20. Okay, so minimally, he's at least 20 years old, because his parents come and they say, he's an adult. He can speak for himself. I don't have to speak for him. If he were younger than 20, his parents would be accountable for him, and they would have to give testimony. But they don't have to, because he's an adult. Okay, and so they say, go ahead and ask him. And they refer the question back to their son. Okay, and guys, let's go ahead and read verse 24. Get closer to the one I really like.
So for the second time, they called the man who had been blind and said to him, give glory to God. We know that this man is a sinner.
Okay. Okay, so this is one of those phrases that doesn't make sense unless you put it in context. Okay. This was kind of like a lawyer-like term. Okay. It actually dates back to the Old Testament, to Joshua, who was questioning a guy by the name of Achan. Okay, who had actually sinned and caused the Jewish army to suffer a huge defeat. And they're trying to figure out who stole the stuff that they weren't supposed to steal, and they're questioning him, and they actually, by the time they get to Achan, they already know exactly that he's the guy. But he lies to begin with. Okay, so let's go ahead and read the Joshua. So this is Joshua questioning Achan.
Then Joshua said to Achan, my son, give glory to the Lord, the God of Israel, by telling the truth. Make your confession and tell me what you have done. Don't hide it from me.
So this is a well-known account in which Joshua says, give glory to God by telling the truth. And so from then on, just they kind of shorten it down and they say, give glory to God, which meant, I don't believe you. Tell me the truth this time. Okay? It's kind of like, I want you to swear on the Bible, or I want you to swear an oath that this is indeed the truth. Give glory to God. Okay, and so what the Jewish authorities are really telling this guy is, you don't believe your story. Come clean and actually tell everybody the truth this time. Okay, and so he goes and he actually this time tells them the truth. Let's go ahead and read verse 25.
I don't know whether he is a sinner or a man or blind, but I know that I was blind and now I can see.
Okay, so this is one of the most classic evangelistic statements of all time. I love this one. And I think last week I told you about Nicole and I, our different evangelism styles in the very beginning. Okay? I was studying the Bible like crazy to make sure I had the answer to every single thing. And all she was doing was she was telling her story. And she was such an effective evangelist. I was so frustrated because I was spending so much time. I wanted to know all the answers. Okay? And the easiest and the best answer always is, all I know was, I once was this, and now I'm this. You figure it out. Right? The guy just says, you're asking me all these hard questions about Jesus and what he is and who he is. I don't know anything about that. Okay? What I do know is, once I was blind, and now I see. That's what I know. Okay? And the truth is, in Scripture, that's all we're really commanded to share. Did you know that? I'm not told I have to have all of the answers. In fact, let's go ahead and read it in Acts 1.
and you will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes upon you. And you will be my witnesses, telling people about me everywhere, in Jerusalem, throughout Judea, in Samaria, and to the ends of the earth.
Okay, so that's red letter stuff, guys. That means that's Jesus talking, and he says, basically, I want you to be my witness. Would you be my witness? So the next question is, I'll ask you, okay, so what is a witness? What does a witness do? They have personal knowledge that they're willing to share with someone else, right? Here's my personal experience, and I'm going to tell you what it is. Okay? That's very, very different from being a defense attorney. Right? Because sometimes we think that that's our job, is to be Jesus' defense attorney. I need to defend Jesus against all attacks. And maybe you've been gifted to do that. You know, maybe apologetics is your thing, and you're able to do that. And that's great. And if you can, do it. But for all of us, the only thing that we're really required to do is be able to tell people our personal experience with Jesus Christ. You know how simple that is? And the coolest thing is, nobody can argue with you. Oh, that never happened to you. It is, right? And that's our story. That's our testimony, right? A witness has a personal experience that they're willing to testify to. Hence the word testimony, right? Testimony is what I relate. Okay? And we all have one. Okay, you've all had a personal experience with Jesus Christ. What you guys got to do is you got to be really able to elaborate that. All right? You know what it is? We all know what it is. The question is, can you communicate? Sometimes that's hard. You know, it's not that easy because a lot of it's like, man, it's like something personal and something that deep and something spiritual. It's really hard sometimes to relate that. Because that's your task, that's your goal, that's your challenge. Okay, you got to be able to give your testimony. It's your most effective tool. It's the one thing that Jesus said, I want you to do this. Okay, so it's one of those things we don't have a choice about. We got to be able to be a witness for Jesus Christ. The cool thing is, everybody can do that. Okay, and our blind man simply gives his testimony. They keep pumping him for answers. They keep pushing him, leaning on him. And so he goes, I don't know anything about that. What I do know is my personal experience. I used to be blind. I had this encounter with Jesus Christ. Now I see. That's what I do know for 100% fact. Okay, well, they don't really like that answer all that much either. Okay, but it's one that they can't argue with. So now we're going to kind of get into that arguing thing that I talked to you about before. Okay? I want you to see how an argument goes from the winner's side and from the loser side. Because although our blind man is completely outmatched and outgunned by all of these Jewish authorities and legal experts and all of these guys that are highly educated, and you know, the blind man probably didn't have any education at all. They probably didn't waste their time teaching him. Right? Taught him how to beg, because that was going to be his life. Okay? And so they come at him hard. So I want you to look at both sides of this, because I don't want you guys to end up being losers in an argument. And there's ways that you can disqualify yourself right away. Okay, give reason for people to discount everything that you say. Okay, and notice he doesn't do that. It's so easy, because sometimes people push our buttons, right? When we talked about it, it's like they start pushing my buttons, and all of a sudden I'm a terrible witness for Christ. We don't want that from you. We want you to be a great witness for Christ. One that they can't discredit. One that they're not going to cause you to go into your pre-Christ defense mode or your default mode. You know, sometimes we have a tendency to default into our old ways. Okay, but keep in mind what that looks like and how it definitely shows that you are losing the argument. There's ways that you can definitely show that you're losing. So let's get into that. Okay. So I think we're on verse 26, yes?
But what did he do? They asked. How did he heal you?
Okay, so in case here's the next one, and I actually love his response. It's another classic. Okay? And so let's look at his response. So they're like, okay, so exactly what is it that he did? He's like, okay, I've already told you that a couple of times so far, but let's go ahead and read that one, actually, now in 27.
"Look," the man exclaimed, "they told you once. Didn't you listen? Why do you want to hear it again? Do you want to become his disciples too?"
Okay, so I actually use this because what people will do, okay, is they try to discredit you. And a lot of them know the really hard questions, the ones that are really hard to answer, and they try to trip you up by seeing that you don't have the answer. See, you don't have the answer. Okay? And it's just, you know, sometimes I don't even have the answer to some of these questions because they're like a trap. They're only throwing it out there because they want to trip you up or trap you. Okay? And so this guy has the classic response. "Why are you so interested in Jesus? You want to become one of his disciples?" Okay, so the way that I do this is, especially if it's one of those hard answers like that, or I know somebody's messing with me and they're just trying to lead me into that rabbit trail or that trick or that trap, is I'll say, "I tell you what, if I'm able to answer your question in a satisfactory way, you start coming to church." Or, so if I can answer that question in a way that's satisfactory to you, will you give your life to Jesus Christ? Do you know I've never had a single person that said, "Yeah, if you can answer my question, I'm going to come to church and I'm going to give my life to Christ." Because that's not where they're asking the question. Right? And the blind man knows that. He's not falling into the trap. Okay? And he has the classic response. "Oh, why are you asking all these questions? Do you want to become a disciple?" And as you might imagine, that even pisses them off even more. Okay? He's not giving them any answers that they want. Okay? He's not falling into the traps. In fact, he's really, notice his style. He's like very calm. I don't want to say this like he's exclaimed, but I don't want to get this idea that he got emotional. Okay? Getting emotional in an argument, that very rarely serves you well. Okay? That's one of the times where you're like, maybe I ought to just kind of relax and wait for a pause for a second before I respond rather than react. And we talked about that a while back. Okay? Responding rather than reacting. Because if you're in that emotional reaction to what is something that somebody says, you're probably not in a good position to respond. Time to wait a little bit. We don't have to respond to everything. Sometimes you say, I have to think about that. Anyway, but that's not what he does. He gets this response. "So why are you asking all these questions about Jesus anyway? Are you interested in becoming one of his followers?" And of course, they're not. Let's go ahead and go on now to how this escalates, because they're starting to become very frustrated with him. Okay? Our Pharisees are starting to lose, and they know it, and so they respond the way a loser responds. Okay? So let's go. From like 28, 29, right?
Yeah. "And they cursed him and said, you are his disciple. But we are disciples of Moses. We know God spoke to Moses, but we don't even know where this man comes from."
Go back and read that very first part of this again.
The first sentence?
Yeah, bring it back down a little bit, Ben. 28, 29.
When they cursed him.
27
or
28?
Oh, him. Sorry.
No. 28, 29. That's what we got. "So then they cursed him." Okay? I'm not going to say it the right way, but yeah. Okay, so you ever got trapped in an argument where all of a sudden it's like, "Screw you!" Okay? Who resorts to that?
Losers.
Absolutely, 100%. You know, if somebody has to start cursing or changing their language like that, guess what? You got them. As long as you don't fall into responding exactly the same way. Because then you're a loser too. Now you get two losers arguing. Okay? And note that if they're resorting to cursing you, you already got them. Don't let them off the hook. Because that's what they want. Right? They want to change your response. So I'm going to invite you guys to be really careful in an argument. We're not going to curse anymore. Okay? We're not going to let anybody get us in that way. Okay? So that's why if you're feeling like that or that's your default mechanism, resist. Okay? Don't go there. But that's where they go. They're like, basically, "Screw you." You know, you're no, who are you? You're a nobody. They start to put him down, right? We're followers of Moses, not followers of Jesus. We're better than you. So, now we get back to him again. Pick it up in verse 30, up to 33.
Why, that's very strange, the man replied. He healed my eyes, and yet you don't know where he comes from? We know that God doesn't listen to sinners, but he's ready to hear those who worship him and do his will. Ever since the world began, no one has been able to open the eyes of someone born blind. If this man were not from God, he couldn't have done it.
Okay, so instead of the gut reaction, which is to go right back into the emotional response, if you've just been cursed and put down, instead, he comes back at him with, let's look at the logical. Okay, let me make a logical case for you so that you can understand it. Right? No one in history has ever opened the eyes of a man born blind. No one, ever. No record of that. Okay? And yet he was able to do that. How could a sinner, someone who is not of God, do such a miraculous thing? Now you explain to me. Because one of the other things, guys, I'll just tell you in an argument or whatever it looks like, the one who's asking the questions is leading the argument. Okay? Too often we end up on the defensive. They're coming at us with all these questions and we're keep backing up, backing up. It's like, if you want to change the course of it, he does what we should do. Let me ask you a question. How is this possible? All right? Here's what happened to me. How is it possible that if it wasn't Jesus, you tell me how it happened. How could such a radical change take place? Well, they're going to actually go even hit him with another low blow in just a second. Okay? Actually, let's go ahead and read it. Verse 34.
You were born a total sinner, they answered. Are you trying to teach us? And they threw him out of the synagogue.
Okay. So, here's what we got. All right, so let's look at the response that we get again, okay, from the way that losers respond in an argument. I want you guys to be losers. Okay? Now they result to name-calling. You're a total sinner. Why should I listen to you? Get out of here. I'm not going to talk to you anymore. I guess what? Loser. Right? If we get to a place where it's an argument, end up cursing, end up name calling, we end up just storming off or throwing the other person out. Get out of my house. Guess what? He's lost. Okay? He doesn't do that because he's a really, really good witness. He just sticks to the script and he repeats it over and over and over again. Okay, so have you ever encounter somebody that does that broken record technique on you? My gosh, that's so frustrating, isn't it? They just keep saying the same thing back. It doesn't matter what you say to them, they say the same thing. Goes, all I know was, I was blind, now I see. Yeah, what about this? I was blind, now I see. I was blind, now I see. He doesn't change his story. He digs in. It's like, I'm going to hold my ground. I'm going to tell you what I do know. You can try to discredit it any which way you want, but here's what I do know. I mean, you can't argue with it. So they just become really, really frustrated because they know that they can't argue with the facts, with what happened to him. That's why I tell you, our testimony is our greatest witness. It's because nobody can argue with it. If you say anything else, you try to come up and explain the Trinity, or you try to explain how Jesus could be 100% human and 100% God at the same time, and it's like, they're going to pick holes in that. You've got to be really, really, really good with that, or you're going to set yourself up. Instead, default is, all I know was, I once was like this, now I'm like this. Calm, collective, not emotional, not screaming, not cursing, not, can you do that? It's not that easy. Everybody's not, oh, I can do that. Some of you guys I'm looking at is like, I don't know. Because that has a tendency to be our default. And that comes from our before Christ days. That's the way they want to see you anyway. You know what I'm talking about? They won't have any problem seeing that. When that comes out, they'll be like, I knew it. He never changed. It's exactly the same thing. He was pretending. A good witness is never held in contempt of court. You know what I'm saying? What would happen if I was in the courthouse? Hopefully none of you guys know. And I start cursing. Name calling. The judge is going to say one more word out of you. I'm going to hold you in contempt. Okay? And in the eyes of the jury, you become a hostile witness, which is also an unreliable, unbelievable witness. You know what I'm saying? Okay? Because I want you to be really, really good witnesses for Jesus Christ. I don't want you to destroy your testimony by your emotional outbursts. It's one of the things we've got to kind of get under control. And I give you permission, guys, to do the broken record thing. Extremely effective in our argument. Man, it's so frustrating to deal with somebody that won't change. And you're trying to get them to say something else, and they keep saying, oh. You know what I mean? I used to use that, actually, in class. I rarely had a problem with kids, but when I would do lunch duty, now you have a bunch of kids you really don't know. You know what I mean? They're the ones that are giving you a hard time, because you got no leverage over there. I can't dock your grade. And so, what I would say, you know, you need to run out of the office. And they always come at you with a million reasons why, blah, 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 blah. You say the same thing. You need to go down to the office. I understand all that. But you need to go down to the office. And you know what? Eventually, they just submit to it because they don't know what else to do. Very, very, very effective way, guys. Rather than get caught up in all the arguments and this and that. You know, I say, the broken record, especially when it's your testimony about Jesus Christ, super effective. Cool? Okay. At this point, we're going to actually take communion together. So those who are at the end that could pass that out. And so whenever we do communion, it's about Jesus Christ. And communion is always putting Christ in the middle. And we think about the before Christ for a little while. And thinking about the before Christ should make us a little bit sad. Truth is, for most of us, we caused a bunch of collateral damage in the days before we knew Jesus. We have a tendency to be a wrecking ball in the lives of others around us. And then Jesus comes along. You get this radical change, right? And now we're who we are now. Hopefully very, very different from that person that we were before. Okay? Because that's your testimony. And so what I want you to do now, because we're always supposed to reflect a bit before we take communion, I want you to reflect about that BC, before Christ, period in your life. Okay? And then your encounter with Jesus. And then who you are now. And you may not be perfect, you may not be all the way there, but you're definitely radically different from who you were, once were. You can't encounter Jesus without being changed. You know what I'm saying? Because I want you to reflect on that for a little while, and we'll take actually a little bit of extra time with that, because that's your testimony, and that's something we need to be deeply knowledgeable of. You know, we need to be intimately knowing our testimony. So let's reflect on that for just a few.